I don't know about you, but when I hear this story, I identify with Martha. All right? I know your job is probably the same way. But you can talk to anybody who is in ministry or has been involved in ministry, and the church and the world is a huge black hole of need. And the needs are relentless. And you go from one appointment to the next with interruptions, one issue to the next, and you can get so busy doing religious business that you don't take time to stop and simply sit in the presence of God. You're so busy that you don't take time to take a pause, take a breath, and listen for what Jesus is trying to tell you, trying to teach you in that time. We're not very well prepared, most of us in ministry, to do that kind of self-care, to take a pause, to go on retreats, to take a time each day to simply sit and breathe and listen. And when we try to do it, of course, those thoughts go racing through our head. What we said yesterday, the conversations we had, what we should have said or thought we should have said, those conversations that we are expecting to have in the future, what we're practicing to say, some conversations that may never come up anyway. And yet all of those thoughts are running through our heads, and it's hard to even stop and breathe. Martin Laird, an Augustinian priest who teaches contemplative prayer practice, said, it's kind of like being, listening to the voices in your head, it's kind of like being the embarrassed host of a raucous cocktail party. You just can't get the guests to be quiet. But there are teachers who say, you know, thoughts come. It's like sitting on the bank of a river and your thoughts are like the water, and you simply watch them go by. You don't dwell on them. You don't have to try to catch the water. You just watch it go by. Others use the image of a mountain and clouds that move in and sometimes even obscure the top of the mountain. But sooner or later, the clouds move on. We don't have to listen to all those voices. We don't have to hold on to all those voices and concerns. We can let them pass and go and take a time and breathe. I've had some teachers along the way who have helped me do that. Some of those are Christian, but quite frankly, some of those are Buddhist as well. Because as a Christian, my ideal is to follow the example of Jesus, to listen to him and to follow that example. But my tradition, even though it had those resources, didn't always teach me the practices that allowed me to do that, the mindfulness practices that allowed me to do that. One of my early teachers I encountered purely by chance. On my 17th birthday, my only Catholic friend, remember I grew up in rural Montgomery County, there weren't a whole bunch of Catholics out there. My only Catholic friend gave me as a present a box of crap. I'm serious. It was just a box of old leftover stuff that he was ready to get rid of. There was a pair of saddle Oxfords in there that were pretty worn already, and I wore them for several more years. There was a bunch of junk, some of which I understood and some of which I didn't. But in that box was a book written by a man named Thomas Merton called Disputed Questions. I began to read it, and I began to read other works by Merton, who was a poet and a monk, who spent much of his life at the Abbey of Our Lady of Gethsemane up in Kentucky, and combined that active life of writing books, responding to letters, protesting war, doing things that he felt was really important, those things that were really important at that time, with a life of prayer and contemplation, and encouraging others to take that time and to use those tools and practices that our tradition affords us to simply sit and breathe and listen. Unfortunately, in our tradition, we've sort of specialized that to say, well, that's what monks do, That's what professional prayers do, professionally religious folk do. But it's not. It's available to all of us. It's available to each and every one of us. And Merton was one of those early teachers. That's why in the 60s someone said that Thomas Merton could talk to the Dalai Lama on an equal basis, because they both had been steeped in those prayer practices that allowed them to sit and to breathe and to listen. Sometimes at night when I'm trying to go to sleep, those conversations will be rushing through my head, the ones from the day before, the ones I'm thinking about that might just happen in the future. And sometimes I forget that my only responsibility when I lay down to sleep is to breathe. That's all I have to do. I don't even have to force sleep, as if you could actually do that. All I have to do is breathe. And breathing and being aware of that breath, prayer, I relax, and eventually, in its own time, sleep comes. Several of my teachers were or are members of this congregation. When I was a student across the street, a young doctoral student who just finished his PhD at the University of Chicago named Charles Hambrick came to teach. Charles and Joy were members of this congregation for many years. They live in Franklin now. They attend church down there now. But I got to be his pastor after many, many, many years. But first, before all that, he was my teacher. He taught what we then called non-Christian religions. Nothing imperialistic about that, huh? I studied Mahayana Buddhism. And while, quite frankly, I've got too much ego to ever be a Buddhist, all right, as a Westerner, I learned about the techniques, and I learned about the breathing exercises, and I learned about mindfulness, and I learned about those things that make for peace. Jesus talked about that. And I wondered, as a college student, now, why didn't my tradition have good stuff? The Buddhist tradition has good stuff. Why doesn't my tradition have good stuff? You have to remember, I grew up as a Protestant in the rural South, and my tradition opposed civil rights for the most part. My tradition was happy with any war, anywhere, anytime, for the most part. But the interesting thing is, coming out of my study of Mahayana Buddhism, I came back to my tradition, and I found that there's a lot of good stuff in this tradition. I just hadn't been paying attention. That's a part of what this story is about. Paying attention. And studying the practices of Buddhism helped me pay attention to Jesus and to what he was calling me to do, who he was calling me to be. In the story, Jesus comes to visit two friends that are sisters. It's interesting. Mary and Martha and their brother Lazarus are not described as apostles or disciples. They are friends of Jesus. When Jesus comes to visit them on this occasion, there's a lot to be done. After all, somebody has to make lunch, right? So Martha is busying around, and Mary is sitting paying attention to Jesus. I don't think Jesus is correcting Martha for being busy, because that's not what he says. After all, if somebody wasn't busy, Jesus wouldn't get lunch. And if you read the Gospels, you know how much Jesus and his followers liked to eat. They were proto-Methodists, right? They liked to eat. What he says to her, and I think it is an expression of concern, is you are so worried and distracted. Boy, do I identify with that. You are so anxious about the many things that you have to do, or you think you have to do, that you're worried and distracted and you're irritable with your sister and you're blaming your sister and you're blaming me. Isn't that the way we get when we get worried and distracted, wanting to blame somebody for all this work that we have to do and we don't know how we're going to get it done? He wasn't laying down a general principle of it's better to just sit and listen and never do anything. No. But it's like when you get on an airplane and you receive the instructions before the flight begins. And they always tell you if the masks drop down and you're traveling with a child, put on your own mask first and then put on the child's mask. Because if you keel over for lack of oxygen, that child is in trouble. Well, that's what many of us don't do. We don't put on our own mask first, and we keel over for lack of spiritual oxygen. And we can't help anybody else. To take time to pause and breathe, not just when you're angry or frustrated, but regularly during the course of the day, regularly during the course of the week, regularly during the course of the month. Many of you know Sally Honor. Sally is the one who organizes our Tazay service. I mentioned it in the announcements. If you've never attended a Tazay service, you've really missed something very special. Because in the noisiness and busyness of our world, to be able to stop and listen to scriptures, to sing together, to sit in silence, is that pause that we need. Sally and I first got to know each other when we both worked at the General Board of Discipleship in the mid-1980s, so we've been friends for a long time. And we've kept a conversation going for all those years, but when I was appointed here, Sally and I got together for lunch very early on. And one of the things that she observed is that we here at West End are really good at getting stuff done. We are Marthas if ever there were Marthas. We see a need and we respond. We see an activity and we plunge into it. And that's great. This congregation has literally transformed not just the people who attend, but large segments of this community because of that. What we're not so good at is taking that pause, stopping to breathe. The merry part of the story, finding that balance. So that we can enter into contemplation, so that we can be mindful and present in the moment, not where we were yesterday, not where we imagine we will be tomorrow, but present in the moment, because God is always present with us. Can we be present to the presence of God? That was the question. And I know Sally has been working with our spiritual formation team here across these years. And one of the things that's coming up is a workshop. Well, actually, it's a retreat with Gordon Pierman. Gordon also grew up in this church. See the kinds of resources we have here to offer not just us, but others? Gordon grew up in this church. Many of you knew his parents. Some of you knew him as he grew up here. I had the privilege of having a part in his mother's service of death and resurrection just a couple of years ago. Gordon is an Episcopal priest. He's also a Buddhist teacher, a teacher of mindfulness techniques, a Dharma teacher. And he does that all over the world, literally. Well, he's coming here at the end of August. You've seen the notices in the bulletin. Let me encourage you. Take some time, if you possibly can, to sit with Gordon Pierman. To sit with the mindfulness techniques that allow us to pause, that allow us to be present to God's presence, that allow us to be merry for a little while. And stop being so worried and distracted and anxious about all the many things that are impinging on our lives. We have these opportunities, but it's not just once a year or once a month. These are available to us anytime. You may have noticed that in our bulletin insert, on our pilgrimage, we are in that stage of focusing on being. And there are suggestions week after week of things that you can do at home, on your porch, in your yard, in the park, that will help bring that pause, that peace, that quietness and mindfulness that allows us to be aware of God's presence with us, that then energizes us to step out and do what God wants us to do, not just react to whatever is happening around us. In an age when the news just seems to get worse and worse and worse, how important is it for us to take that time to pause, to be present in God's presence, and to listen? You know, I don't know what it's like to be the parent of an African-American teenager. I have friends who do. Some of them are African-American and some of them are not, but they have African-American or mixed-race teens, and I don't know what it's like to worry about your child every time they get into a car to go out driving, that for some small infraction, they could be stopped and enter into an altercation that would leave them dead, and you would be receiving a phone call giving you that news. I don't know what that's like. I don't know what it's like to be the spouse of a police officer. Every morning knowing that when she or he leaves the house, you may not ever see them again. That they could stop someone even for a minor infraction. And not knowing what they're approaching when they approach that car window, make a split-second decision and wind up dead, and you would receive that phone call. I don't know what it's like to be an African-American teenager to be stopped by the police. I know what it's like when I've been stopped by the police. You ever been stopped by the police? I'm scared to death. My heart is in my throat, even if I haven't done anything. I got stopped once in my own neighborhood because I had a little thing around my license plate that said, "Open minds, open hearts, open doors, the United Methodist Church." He told me it was illegal. I could have told him a lot of church people in the church think it's illegal to have open minds, open hearts, and open doors too. But I didn't. I didn't smart mouth him. I was too scared. I just went home and took it off. Okay? I don't know what it's like to be an African-American teenager and experience that, if an old codger like me is that nervous. And I don't know what it's like to be an officer approaching a window, a car window, not knowing what might be in there or what the individual sitting in that car might choose to do. Both of those are driven by fear. The fear of the parents of those teenagers and the fear of the teenager. The fear of those who love those officers and the fear that the officers feel when they approach that window. And I know that one antidote to fear is to take a pause, to take a breath before you just respond. On either side. One of the people who was in conversation with Thomas Merton was a Buddhist monk named Thich Nhat Hanh. Thich Nhat Hanh is Vietnamese. He was a Buddhist monk during the Vietnam War. When the American troops pulled out, it didn't stop the war over there. And he refused to take sides between the warring factions. And so he was driven out of the country, basically, because he would minister to whomever needed his help. He went to France. He started a sangha, a house of study, I guess you would say, called Plum Village. He's traveled around the world teaching these mindfulness techniques. Martin Luther King Jr. nominated him for a Nobel Peace Prize. Recently, on a podcast I listened to called On Being with Krista Tippett, she rebroadcast a conversation with Thich Nhat Hanh. And in this particular gathering, he was talking to police officers who were there to study mindfulness, if you can imagine. And if you want to go to On Being and listen to it, it's very revealing. That's only part of the conversation, but it's very revealing that these officers saw that facing their own death and knowing that they might be put in a position to take a human life, they wanted every single tool at their disposal to make the best decision. And this was one of those tools. Taking a pause. Taking a breath. Walking into a situation not reactive. Not completely without fear. But not controlled by that fear. And these mindfulness techniques that we as Christians know as contemplative prayer, that the Buddhists know as mindfulness, are tools that allow even those in highly stressful and dangerous situations to stop and pause and take a breath. And perhaps situations will turn out differently if folks can simply do that very simple thing. But of course, I had a teacher of that early on, didn't I? My granny, who when I was worried and distracted and frustrated and angry and wanted to stomp my feet because it felt good to get it out, said, "Oh, Mike, stop and count to 10. And even when I couldn't do that, even when I couldn't count to 10, what she taught me was right. She was my first teacher of mindfulness. To take a pause, to take a breath, not to be dominated by that fear or that frustration, but to think about what God would want me to do next. To sit like Mary at the feet of Jesus and listen to what he would have me do in this situation. And not be so worried and distracted, which is what I am most of the time, to be honest. I thank God for all these people in my life who have been my teachers. And I thank God most of all that we do have the tools to do what Jesus taught us, the things that make for peace personally, between individuals, and I'm convinced even within the church and the larger community. Thanks be to God.